Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week we raise the virtual curtain of our Corona Radio Theater once again for members of BATS Improv presenting Radio Venture, an original audio play in the style of the golden age of radio, performed live and created spontaneously on the air. You'll hear about the Friction Quartet's new album, Rising, from violinist Kevin Rogers. And Peter Robinson reviews books and movies, among others, The Crown. Stay with us. That's music from the Friction Quartet and their new CD/download, Rising. An excerpt from Alex Van Hill's A Sleepwalker describes the rising of the seas, a work that was the result of a vision that Alex had while meditating. In that vision, Alex could see the skyline of San Francisco submerged by rising sea levels. It's the theme of Rising, which is a musical love letter to our fragile planet. In addition to referring to the increasing water and temperatures that threaten to consume our human settlements and the wilderness around us, it's also a rallying cry to mobilize our community against this catastrophe. And it's the latest work, Rising, from the Friction Quartet. Since forming in 2011, the quartet has given more than 70 world premiere performances, commissioned some 44 works for string quartet. They've received grants from Chamber Music America, Intermusic San Francisco, the Zellerbach Family Foundation, and the California Arts Council, and are entering their fourth consecutive year with the San Francisco Symphony's Adventures in Music program, providing interdisciplinary music to young students. They gave the Carnegie Hall debut recital as part of the Kronos Quartet workshop in 2016 and returned in March of 2018 to perform George Crumb's Black Angels as part of the 60s Festival. The members of the Friction Quartet seem to have adopted an appropriate name, not just for their ensemble, but for an entire vein of musical thought, so says Joshua Cosman. He goes on with this was high-octane music-making, and the Frictioneers brought to all of it a fine blend of rhythmic ferocity and tonal flair. Joshua Cosman from the Chronicle. The quartet is Doug Matches, cello, violinist Lucia Kobza and violinists Otis, Harriet, and Kevin Rogers. Kevin joining me now via Zoom to talk about this new project. Kevin, welcome to Open Air.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Well, in addition to receiving grants and concertizing, you're also involved in commissioning new works for Quartet. This new CD Rising has three works that were commissioned for Friction by Alex Van Gils, who we just heard, Matt Stofregen featured, and a 30-minute long work by Gabriella Smith called Inyo. Tell me a little bit about how you spread the word about the commissioning projects and the fruits of those labors in addition to the CD.
Well, our current efforts have been around our commissioning initiatives. We've so far done two. The way it works is we, as a group, decide what composers we want to commission. We will ask our friends and colleagues, and we'll reach out to these composers and ask them if they want to be involved. And then once we have our composers lined up, we fundraise to try and raise the money to pay for these pieces. And a lot of that is done through using mailers we have, our social media, making YouTube videos, sharing them on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and our friends sharing these things on their platforms. And that's been a big part of how we've raised funds for these pieces. And we also have some donors who have been following our quartet for a long time, and they've been very generous helping provide the funds to commission these pieces.
Well, it's nice that you're not only receiving money, but you're giving it in terms of those commissioning projects and increasing the repertoire and getting some new sounds out to the public. Now, COVID has certainly changed the landscape for virtually all live performers. In fact, turning many into exclusively virtual performers. Now, how has the quartet adapted and been able to perhaps assemble and practice during this time, or have you?
It's been very difficult. We aren't able to maintain pods with the members of the quartet, so we haven't been able to rehearse in person very often. We have done some outdoor rehearsals where we're socially distanced, but of course that's dependent on the weather. In the summer, it was really hard for us to do that because the smoke from the fires made it difficult for us to rehearse outside. And now that it's getting colder, it's a little harder to rehearse because our fingers can't move as fast. So that's part of the consideration for meeting in person. We've had very few meetings in person. We've done a lot of online rehearsal using streaming services like StreamYard, for example. And that's been a challenge because there's latency. And when we're trying to play music together, it's obviously impossible to play something that needs to be precisely aligned, kind of like Alex's piece that you heard earlier. That couldn't happen online. But we have done some interesting projects. Like we just did one with some composers that wrote pieces using the latency as part of the music. And it was premiered through Center for New Music, I think, on Saturday. And it was very successful. The composers had a lot of really innovative ideas of how to make music where you can't have things like unisons anymore. You can't have a lined up cadence anymore. So then how do you structure music in that way? And we thought it was important to have pieces like that written in this time as sort of like a monument for this time where we're all sheltered in place. And also as a way for us to make music and be creative.
Sure. Well, I should give a shout out to my colleague and fantastic pianist here at KLW, Sarah Cahill, with whom you've collaborated for some piano quintets, among others, Tanya Leon and Jennifer Higdon, as well as Max Stofregen, who we're going to hear some music from later. How was that concert? I believe it was in 2019 that you worked with Sarah.
Yeah, that's right. We premiered a piano quintet written by Max Stofregen, and it was sort of composed in a similar style to the quartet that he wrote us that's on the album Rising. He's very inspired by the natural world, and in his pieces, he tries to sort of capture his relationship with the natural world in the music. So the piano quintet was about his hike up this river in the desert. I can't remember the river. I think it's the Gila River. So as he's hiking up the river, the music is changing as if the environment, or just like the environment, was changing. And so it was a really cool process to see how he would take, like, oh, this is where the river is doing a lot of bends and there's a lot of white water, and how he made that sound. Or, for example, this is a very sparse part of the hike where it's pretty flat and there's not a lot of geographic things to pick up on. Like maybe there's cactuses, but it's very flat and repetitive. So what kind of music would that sound like? And working with Sarah Cahill was a dream come true. I've been a long fan of hers, often watching from the audience in admiration. I mean, when I was in school, we studied her recordings whenever we had 20th century music and 21st century music. So it was kind of an amazing experience to work with her on this new piece. You know, it was incredible.
She's another fantastic artist who has done a great service to the musical world by commissioning a lot of works for piano. And she's a dear friend, and I look forward to a collaboration with her this coming spring, myself. Now, among your CD releases, the chamber music of another good friend and composer, David Conte. Upcoming collaborations will be with guitarist Zane Forshi and the percussion duo Arx Duo. So those upcoming performances must be kind of in limbo, everything is dependent on what's coming in 2021.
That's right. A lot of those things have sort of stalled as we wait to see what concert halls are going to be like in 2021. Even though there's a vaccine now on the horizon, there's not enough for everyone to get it. And it still is important for us as performers to make sure that those who are coming to the concert are safe. That's our number one priority. So even though it's like really difficult that all these concerts have been canceled and we can't gather in place, it's for good reason. And we certainly understand that. And we want our audience members to be healthy and safe.
I think it's going to be easier for folks that are playing instruments like stringed instruments rather than wind players like myself or opera singers or brass players to get back on the concert stage than it will. We'll see a lot more string writing, I think, in the months ahead and hearing a lot more. And someday we'll be able to blow our air, shall we say, amongst the population again. I should also mention that your video of the second movement of the first quartet of John Adams was named the number two video of the year back in 2015 by Second Inversion. And John himself shared the video on his own homepage and called it spectacular. So you guys are doing some good work on the video front already. And technical innovations is part of the equation now for most musicians and performers.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's been a huge part of our success. I think one of the things we did early on was decide to make videos and put them on YouTube right away. We did a recording of the Ravel Quartet last movement and third movement, and that got quite a bit of views. And then we did a concert with Old First Concert Series, and they're a wonderful venue to play at because they provide recordings that go on YouTube. And one of those was a cover of a Radiohead song, Exit Music for a Film. And that's our most watched video. It has over 100,000 views at this point. And people will Google String Quartet San Francisco, and that video will come up. So it's been those online things like the YouTube videos have been a huge help for us and allows us to reach audiences not just in the Bay Area.
Links to those videos at frictionquartet.org. We should also mention that let's get back to the most recent CD, Rising. It's kind of something that might finally get some more attention in the new administration coming ahead. So you might get some extra sales and boosts just for your very theme of calling attention to the climate for a change and having it paid attention to. Should mention that the 30-minute piece by Gabriella Smith is called Inyo. It's a big piece. Kind of depicts her journey through the Sierra landscape. She took the title Inyo from Inyo National Forest, a wilderness in the eastern Sierra, with Inyo, which means dwelling place of the Great Spirit in the Mono language. Again, all three works on this CD, Friction or Download, however you prefer your mode of musical delivery, are commissions of the Friction Quartet. And we're going to go out with a piece the fourth movement of The California Crest by Max Stauffregen, entitled Cinder Cone from The California Crest. Tell us a little bit about Max Stauffregen. You worked with him, you mentioned earlier, with the concert of Sarah Cahill, and he's quite an interesting character himself.
Yes, that's right. Max, I think, is a Bay Area native, and he grew up listening to a lot of hip hop and a lot of pop music. And that's inspired him to write these really interesting rhythmic ideas into his music. And you'll hear that, especially in this last movement that you're going to play from the album. And he's using those rhythmic ideas to kind of capture the feeling of being on top of these really tall mountains that are sort of dead volcanoes, and kind of imagining like how these things were born out of like the earth being shifted by all of this molten lava. And that's a theme throughout the entire quartet. Each movement is kind of a vignette of a certain part of his hike along the California Crest Trail. So the first movement is like at the beginning where it's a desert, and you start to climb up these deserts until you get to a certain elevation where all of a sudden there are trees on the tops of the mountains because there's humidity in the air. And there's sort of sky islands that are like there's life on top of this mountain in the sky, this island of life. And then the next movement sort of describes walking in the desert, and you just have this sunrise, and it just culminates where it's this oppressive note. Everyone's playing the same note as loud as we can. And it's like the sun is just bearing down on you in the middle of the desert. And then the next movement is kind of imagining a lake being reborn. It's Owens Lake. It used to be filled with water back when there was a lot more ice in the Sierras, but due to climate change, you know, we've lost many of the glaciers in the United States. And so that movement is sort of an homage to imagining what it would be like if we still had water in this massive lake.
Kevin Rogers, the best to you and the rest of the quartet, thefrictionquartet.org for more information. Wish you well in the new year, health and happiness for the holiday season.
Likewise, and thank you so much for having me on air. I really appreciate it.
Of course, let's hear a bit of the fourth movement of the 2015 commissioned work, California Crest by Max Stoffregen, Cinder Cohn. The composer writes, "My approach to composing music inspired by the mountains of California was not very sophisticated. I saved money, quit my job, and decided to try to hike the Pacific Crest Trail from its southern terminus to Northern California." From the California Crest, an excerpt from Cinder Cohn by Max Stoffregen, performed by the Friction Quartet. More at Friction Quartet and their new CD/download, Rising, at frictionquartet.org. Good afternoon to you. I'm David LaTulipe. We'll be hearing from Peter Robinson before the hour's out with some movie and book reviews. But right now we take you back to the golden age of radio for our Corona Radio Theater segment, courtesy of Bat's Improv. A time when the Shadow fought crime before Batman was born. Buck Rogers saved the galaxy long before Luke Skywalker. TVs were still rare, so radio was the favorite medium for bringing imaginative theater of the mind into every home. Here's Ken Robertson of Bat's Improv.
Hi, David. Thank you. We're thrilled to be back. We've got four Bats players with you. I'm Ken Robertson. Bats players, introduce yourselves to our radio audience.
I'm there, Dave Dennison.
Joy of Zoom.
We're making this up live, can you?
I mean, I can't even point to the right person to do that.
I know. Well, let's try. Take two.
Ladies first. Hi, Karen.
Hi, I'm Karen Brelsford. Hello.
I'm Dave Dennison.
Hi, I'm John Remack.
And as you said, we're from Bats Improv. Bats has been around since 1986 in the Bay Area. And like so many other performing arts organizations, we took a major change in March of this year. We normally do shows every Friday and Saturday live on stage, some, you know, over 110 shows a year in over 25 different formats. And then when everything shut down, we had to figure out how to do this virtually. Since then, we've created 30 new different formats that we're performing every weekend, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But for now, we want to create an original radio play. Everything we do is spontaneously made up on the spot. So for those who are listening, we don't have a script. We have sort of a general style in mind, but we don't have anything written down. We don't have any plans. We don't have any blocking, none of that. And to prove that, actually to get us a little bit of help and get us started, David, I would like to ask you a few questions that will inspire our show today, that we'll build off of that.
I'll jump it off the deep end here. Okay.
All right. In particular, what is something that, you know, now that we're fully in the holiday season, albeit a weird one, a bit different, but what is something that you usually see or hear that really gets you in the holiday mood?
I would have to be, it would have to be my favorite classic since I was a kid, the Rankin-Bass classic, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Excellent. And when you think about all of the, you know, the feelings and that come along with the holiday season, what's an emotion that is kind of on the awkward side of all of those feelings that maybe you go, ooh, kind of don't want to go there?
Drunken family reunions. How's that?
Okay. Drunken family reunions. What would be the emotion that shows up with that?
Let's call it anxiety.
Anxiety. Okay. All right. And then what is something, you know, because shopping these days has become a bit different as well. What's something that's on, if you were going out to, you know, run an errand and one of your neighbors sees you and they go, hey, hang on just a sec. Would you mind picking up this? What would they ask you to pick up for them?
Some hand sanitizer.
Hand sanitizer. Great. So we will have a sponsor that is a hand sanitizer, which, of course, was very popular in the 1930s. Most people don't know that, but I'm sure it's true. It is now. We're making it up. And we will create a completely original radio drama inspired by your suggestions, which will be called Rudolph and the Red Nose of Anxiety. All right.
With additional musical interludes by Joshua Raoul Brody.
Correct. It's time for the Bats Radio Venture Hour. Brought to you by Stripped and Scrubbed Sand Sanitizer, the only hand sanitizer that's guaranteed to sanitize your hands in a way that they can't be called unsanitary. Stripped and Scrubbed Hand Sanitizer, available everywhere and fueled by all of that gin that we can't sell due to prohibition. Hand sanitizer, scrub and script. And now, tonight's show. Our episode, Rudolph and the Red Nose of Anxiety.
You want me to freshen up your drink there, sir?
Yeah, why not, Barney? Give me another one.
All right.
I'm on a case, Barney. I don't know. My head is swimming. Thanks for that, pal.
Hey, you wouldn't happen to be able to share any details about this case, would you?
I will if you give me another one, Barney.
All right, this one's on the house.
Thanks. I'm stumped, I tell you, stumped. I got a call the other day from Santa. He's missing one of his reindeer.
Santa, you say?
Yeah.
The man up north.
That's right. So I went and talked to my buddies at the North Pole PD department. NPPD. Find out what they knew. I talked to my old friend, Detective Rogers, to find out what he knew about the missing reindeer. I didn't like going back there, you know, because I got kicked out. Kicked out of the NPPD.
What are you doing back here, Nichols? I thought we kicked you out of NPPD. Don't tell me you're on this reindeer case.
I got a call from a private individual. All right, it's Santa. He says one of his reindeer is missing.
That's supposed to be going up on the air. It should not be going into the Zoom.
Nichols,
it is.
You're a damn good detective, but we all know what happened up here. I don't think you'll ever be welcome in North Pole PD, but between you and me, we think the reindeer may have met with foul play. You didn't hear it from me, Nichols.
Yeah, I can't hear anything in this office. You got so many things going on. Let me tell you something. Sure, I shot that elf, but he drew first.
Yeah. Well, the Elf Guild says differently. I'm sorry, Nichols. That's all I can help you with. If you have to investigate...
I'm going to speak up. There's too many people in this office.
I know. North Pole PD is hopping this time of year. There's always people looking to find if they're on the naughty or nice list. But, Nichols, if you're going to investigate this missing reindeer, you're on your own.
So, Bonnie, that was it. He was no help. Another one, please.
Yeah, I heard everything up in the North Pole's pretty crooked and noisy as well.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, let me tell you what happened next. I went to visit Santa, but he wasn't there. Instead, Mrs. Claus was there. And she was, well, let's just say she was imbibing in a little bit of spiced rum.
Well, sure, you can come in here to the toy shop. I'm just having a little hot apple cider. Would you like a cup yourself, Detective Nichols?
Yeah, maybe you'd like to put on a robe, Mrs. Claus.
Oh, sorry, I just getting festive for the holidays. Here, have a sip of this hot apple cider. What brings you to the North Pole toy shop?
Well, your husband called. He said he's missing a reindeer. You didn't hear about it?
Are you talking about Rudolph, that red-nosed reindeer again? He's always going missing.
Sounds like you and him didn't have a good relationship.
Oh, well, I mean, he wanted to be a star, you know. He was so bright and luminous with that red nose. I mean, it was a little overkill, so maybe I had a couple thoughts of getting rid of Rudolph, but I'd never heard a cute reindeer. He's a star.
I never said you'd heard him, Mrs. Claus. I just was wondering. Were you and him ever involved?
Hey, we made some toys together. But Santa and Rudolph are the ones that work together primarily. You want to talk to Santa?
Well, where is he?
I don't know. It's a busy time of year. He could be anywhere. Maybe check the reindeer barn.
All right, I'll check the reindeer barn. Thanks for the spice drink.
You're welcome. Come back any time, Detective Nichols.
Sure. Well, I think she was hitting on me, but I wasn't sure. But I found out later. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Hey, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was just going to sanitize my hands with some of this great stripped and scrubbed hand sanitizer. You know, it's made from the gin that I'm not able to sell in this bar.
Yeah, made with now with more bathtub gin.
But I digress.
Good for your hands, good for your breath.
And it sanitizes. That's the important thing. It's stripped and scrubbed.
Well, I know it sanitizes, but I wish it sanitized because I went into the barn later on, like Mrs. Claus told me to do. But I didn't see him there. Instead, I saw a sad, abominable snowman.
Who are you?
I got a name. I'm a detective.
I'm sorry. I was just hiding out in this barn. It's one of the few places that people aren't trying to find me.
What's wrong there, pal? You look forlorn.
You ever been called abominable before?
No, can't say as I have.
Once that label is applied to you, it sticks. People think somehow you're a monster.
But ain't that what you is?
No. No, I'm just large and furry. I just want to make people happy. I just want to make snow sculptures for people. But with these big paws and a label like abominable, do you think people understand? No. No. It's the last place I go. I've been reduced to hiding in a reindeer barn and drinking hand sanitizer.
I tell you, Barney, it was the saddest thing I ever saw. And I realized that I, too, had my prejudices against the, what I now know, don't call the abominable snowman, but just a man who happens to be abominable. You know, we all have our faults. And I learned something that day, which was yesterday, that we all got our faults.
Yeah, I suppose that's news and also not news.
Yeah.
All right, Dasher and Dancer and Prancer, it's one more round of blackjack, and then we should probably go saddle up for Santa's big outing today.
Yeah, okay, hit me.
All right, there's one card for you, Prancer.
I'm busted. I'm out.
I'll take two.
All right, Dancer, there's two for you.
Yeah, it looks like you're all in the middle of some sort of blackjack game.
Well, yeah, more like a blackjack fleecing.
Hey, you look like a detective. You're that Detective Nichols guy, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. I'm the guy that shot that elf.
Right, we heard about you.
But it was an elf defense.
Hmm. Well, come join us here in the Santa's office. He never uses it this time of year. You want to in on this game?
No, thanks. So, I don't see Rudolph anywhere.
No, it's just Dancer and Prancer and me, Vixen. Yeah, Vixen. I'm Vixen.
He usually doesn't play in this game.
Oh.
Rudolph thinks he's too good to play with us common reindeer.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So he won't play in your reindeer games.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
He's too good for us.
He thinks he's bound for like Radio City or something. Maybe even Hollywood.
Well, I think maybe one of you knows something more than they're saying.
Hey, why are you grabbing Vixen around the neck?
Hey, let me go. Get your hoofs off of me.
Come on. Look at this, Vixen. What are you wearing here? A Rolex?
Yeah.
That's an awful nice watch for a reindeer.
Yeah, it was a gift from Santa. It was Reindeer of the Month last year.
Yeah, let me see. To Rudolph from Santa. This is Rudolph's watch, Vixen. What are you doing with it?
Well, he lost it in the game of blackjack.
You just said he didn't play blackjack with you guys.
Well, I'm out of here. Take this watch. I'm out of here.
Well, Barney, I couldn't catch that reindeer if I tried. It flew off. And there I was with Rudolph's watch, a missing reindeer, no Santa. And that's why I'm here right now.
Looks like there's not going to be a Christmas this year.
Not unless I can find that reindeer.
Wait.
Any thoughts?
There's a reindeer figure in the doorway right now.
They're opening the door.
I think you're looking for me.
Is that you, Rudolph?
Who else would it be with a nose like this?
It's all shiny and red. I thought you were kidnapped or something.
That's what you were meant to believe, Detective. Only you weren't supposed to... You weren't supposed to get as far as you did. You see, I'm trying to end my life as Rudolph and begin a new life, and you're getting in the way, Detective. That's why I've had this gun on you.
Oh, I didn't see that. I'm going to put my hands in the air.
Yes, most people never see when I have a gun. They're distracted by my nose.
Tell me about the change you're going through, Rudolph. Because I've been going through a change lately. Seeing people in a different way.
Yes. But I'm going through a change. I'm tired of those reindeer roots. If people only see me as a deer, I'll never get very far. That's why I'm getting rid of my past. And I'm going to rebrand myself as the next Errol Flynn.
Well, good luck with that.
What sort of changes are you going through, Detective? Besides the fact that you're about to go from alive to dead.
Well, I was just telling Barney here at the bar that I realize that everybody's got their faults. We're all just people, or we're all just deer trying to be people. And if that's what you want, you should have that.
No one's ever said that to me. Generally, people want me to deliver their packages and guide their sleighs. It's never about what Rudolph wants, only what Rudolph can do for them.
What did you do with Santa? You kidnapped him, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, I put him in his own sack and dropped him down a chimney somewhere over North Dakota.
Where? Where in North Dakota? Tell me.
Billings. He's in Billings.
I'm out of here.
Billy? Billy, come here and look at the fireplace with me. Billy?
Yeah?
Look at that red sack that's sitting in the fireplace. It's moving.
Oh... Emily, there's a man crawling out of the sack.
Oh, my God. Oh, look. Gee, golly. I think that's Santa Claus, Billy.
My head. Oh, where am I?
Santa Claus.
You're in our living room in Billings, North Dakota.
Oh, kids.
Yeah, the one house in Billings. I'm going to kick the door in. There you are, Santa.
You, is that Detective?
Nichols, yeah. Sorry I shot your reindeer. Come on, let's get in your sleigh. Let's get back to the North Pole.
Bye, Santa Claus.
Bye, Santa.
So, it seems like Rudolph kidnapped you instead of you kidnapped him or something.
Yeah, that was one dirty deer. He knocked me out and was gonna take my place and grant his own wish, but you, Detective, you're the one that solved it.
Well, I know how these things can happen at drunken family reunions. People get together and they say things that they don't mean.
Hey, Detective. I just want to give you this big shiny box. You're on the nice list.
Thanks. There's something else I got to do, Santa. Excuse me. gotta go back to my bar. Well, Barney.
Hey, detective.
I don't know. That almost wraps up the story, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't help but notice your hands look a little dirty. You've been outside and been handling a lot of, well, animals. Maybe now is the time for a good hand sanitizing.
Yeah, I can wash off the dirt, but I can't wash off the blood of that elf. Unless some miracle happens. Give me that sanitizer.
Tiny package, Nichols.
What was that? Do that again.
Remember the package Santa gave you.
Oh, that was me talking to myself. Santa gave me a package. Here, let me open it up. You got some scissors? Thanks, Barney. It's a Blu-ray disc. I don't know what that is. Oh, look, here's a film cartridge. You got a projector?
Sure, I got a projector.
Here, put this on the projector. Right here. That's lucky. Now look, it's that alleyway where I met up with that elf. Look, it clearly shows that the elf is drawing his gun first. This is it, Barney. This is the evidence I need to clear my name.
Yeah, at last the guilt has been lifted off your shoulders.
It's like my guilt has been sanitized. Or sanitized.
Tune in next week to the Bat's Radio Venture Hour to see exactly how sanitized one can be. Brought to you by Stripped and Scrubbed Hand Sanitizer. Now 100% effective with elf blood. We'll see you for our next exciting episode.
Aaron Brelsford, Dave Dennison, John Remack, and Ken Robertson from Bats Improv for this week's Corona Radio Theater segment, accompanied with music and sound effects by Joshua Raoul Brody. Corona Radio Theater, an initiative we started here on KALW's Open Air to give actors an opportunity not just to talk about their projects, but to actually perform. And with folks at Bats Improv jumping off the deep end and doing it entirely improvisatorily. Thank you so much, folks.
Thank you for having us. We always enjoy being on the show.
Bats Improv started in 1986 and has gone on to become the premier improv theater company and training center in Northern California. While improv often gets associated with stand-up comedy, Bats uses improv to create theater, funny theater, created live without a script. In normal times, Bats performs over 110 shows each year in over 25 different formats, always spontaneously created as the audience watches. This year, Bats is adapting. There are live shows tomorrow, a show at 8 p.m., and learn more about Bats online classes at improv.org. Thanks again, folks. We go now to our good friend Peter Robinson for some musical reviews, as well as something I think we've all been a little bit obsessed with some folks across the pond. We've got to get Peter unmuted and Damien bringing up some music.
And there we have it. God save the Queen God save the Queen. God save the microphone. God save KLW. And God save us all. So I have been watching the second series of the fourth season of The Crown. And as a result, we are facing something known as the Balmoral Test. The Balmoral Test is the home of the royal family in Scotland, and they retire there for family gatherings, but they also have special guests. And in the fourth series of The Crown, it is Margaret Thatcher, the first female Prime Minister of England, and of course, Princess Di. At the helm, Elizabeth and Philip, played by Olivia Colman and Tobias Menzies, act as the hosts. And for both these visitors, it is the first time, which is why the episode is called The Balmoral Test. Margaret Thatcher, I think, is a good caricature actor, and sometimes it moves from character to caricature. Briefly, I think we should remember that she'd been at Oxford. She'd also been a minister, not a prime minister. So she would have known how to behave at Balmoral. But this particular series really raises her profile. So when they go out hunting or shooting, she is still wearing high-heeled shoes. And the royal family, of course, are in Wellingtons or boots. So there are some little discrepancies, but it's definitely a fun series. The second guest, which is Diana Spencer, future wife of Charles and also princess, is played by Emma Corrin. And she arrives to be inspected for that particular role, which is being a potential royal wife. She comes across as natural. She could be described as seductive. But the one thing she doesn't know is what the future holds in front for her, as she becomes in many ways a sacrificial, let's say the word virgin, because the royal family does not take into account that Camilla is the, let's call it the piece on the side. And of course, that is the real issue that comes through the whole of this episode. Now, for some people who like soap opera, in many ways, this is an excellent soap opera. It's well scripted. And one thing I found myself doing, because I was in England during this period, I was covering different aspects of politics, is what I call the reality test. And theatre, particularly when you're scripting a true story, has to be speeded up. So there are cuts and excerpts in this which make sense. And in every case, the background scenery is superb. El Mountbatten, who would later be assassinated by the Irish Republican Army, has scenes of Ireland. The Balmoral Scottish background is, of course, beautiful countryside. But what we as viewers are interested in is the relationship. How does the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh get along? How does Princess Di fit into a dinner party? And we see the royals playing a very strange, unusual British game, which, unless you've played it ever, which I haven't, you wouldn't really come to believe. But at the end of the day, we're getting a glimpse behind the walls of Buckingham Palace. We're getting a glimpse of home in Scotland. And we're getting a glimpse of a future that we know will end in disaster for Diana. So you're writing a script at a period of time, which is in the late 70s and finishes in the early 90s, that we know the end of the story. And I think it's a tribute to the scriptwriters that they keep our attention and they keep the drama going. So if you're looking for a different type of soap opera, if you're looking for insights on how the Queen thinks and the Queen of England, how the Duke of Edinburgh feels, how Prince Charles acts in a triangular relationship, tune in to the series called The Crown. We're now in the fourth season, and most of the action takes place at this Scottish castle known as Balmoral. Now, if we move from the Netflix screen to the real screen, I'd like to recommend a new book by David Thompson, and it's called Murder in the movies. And this is very much a personal trip that the established and well-known movie critic David Thompson has written for us. And what he creates is, what does it feel like to go into a cinema alone and know you're going to watch a murder movie? In many ways, his argument is not about movies, it's, do the works behind the movie actually work? So he's in the same bracket as the great British critic Clive James, or earlier Roger Ebert, that he takes you as a viewer into the film he's about to see. He reflects on censorship. The Hays Commission had very strict rules by the 1930s, where certain scenes, particularly to do with nudity, could not be displayed. And in some ways, this makes the art of the critic more creative, just as it makes the moviegoers creative. So his real subject in Murder and the Movies is an examination of the internal abstract desires of a movie critic as he's watching the film happen. Death, we all know, is inevitable. Death in a murder story is more than inevitable. And the journey is part of the book's appeal as a kind of antic speculation. Thompson draws on his own distinctive voice, authoritative, witty, confessional, provocative, to analyze the cinema's playful interweaving of desire and control, its confrontation with our terror of extinction, its self-conscious mixture and match of comedy and tragedy. And he has some interesting backstories on that great producer, Alfred Hitchcock, explaining how Hitchcock was, in his early days, working in Germany in the great age of German cinema, and how, even though he was only doing credits, he got the hang of how to create suspense. So for movie buffs who want something over the Christmas, over the new year, to look for a good read, the title of the book is called Murder and the Movies. It's by David Thompson. And if you're looking for some real fun soap opera viewing, The Crown is an ongoing series, and this particular episode, which is season 4, is running from the years 1970 to 1990. You'll see how Margaret Thatcher reacts when she visits the royal family in Scotland, and how Princess Di, who of course we all know had a fateful death, is at this stage about to meet her husband-to-be, Prince Charles. So we recommend you good viewing, good reading, and enjoy being at home with a mask. My famous phrase for nowadays is mask it or casket. So in the best sense, enjoy being at home, reading a good book, and enjoying Netflix.
Thank you, Peter Robinson, a regular contributor here on Open Air. I should make a note of a couple of interesting, one sad death date this morning. I learned of the death of a friend and former colleague back at Brooklyn College, Noah Krzyzewski. Noah was one of the founders of the Center for Computer Music and was proud to be a member of the faculty of the Conservatory of Music, Brooklyn College, CUNY. He called it one of the best places to teach music composition. And once he began here, he never desired to teach anywhere else. He took early retirement from CUNY in 2000 and spent the past 20 years composing and releasing an impressive body of work in his hyper-realism genre, as can be seen on his Wikipedia page. Noah Krzyzewski, rest in peace, a good friend. And it's the birth date of Nina Rota, who lived from 1911 to 1979. Rota was an Italian composer, pianist, conductor, and academic who is best known for his film scores, notably for the films of Federico Fellini and Visconti. He also composed the music for two of Franco Zeffirelli's Shakespeare films and for the first two films of Francis Ford Coppola's Godfather trilogy, receiving an Academy Award for Best Original Score for The Godfather Part II back in 1974. Beyond the music for the cinema, he was an extraordinarily prolific composer. He wrote more than 150 scores for Italian and international productions from the 1930s until his death in 1979, an average of three scores each year over a 46-year periodic period, in addition to 10 operas, 5 ballets, and dozens of other orchestral and chamber works, as well as choral works. Wonderful composer. One of the first flute solos I ever played back in, gosh, I guess it was 7th grade at Sykes School in Rockville, Connecticut. I didn't know it then was by the great Nino Rota from 1968, the love theme from Franco Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet. From the 1968 Zeffirelli film Romeo and Juliet, music of Nino Rota, born this date in 1911. That's Open Air for this week. I'm David LaTulip. A reminder that our shows are archived at kalw.org. My thanks to Damian D. Minor for keeping things running in the studio, and to Neil Swinkles for producing the show in this time of COVID, a challenge for everyone all around, and all making good work of it. If you're a fan of theater, a reminder that LA Theater Works is a regular feature on KLW's on Friday evenings at 8 o'clock this week. Calista Flockhart stars in Henrik Ibsen's A Doll's House. That's tomorrow evening from 8 to 10 here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.